Sports, wine, life. This is the Macko and Cos podcast.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Macko and Cos podcast. Well, I promise the audio quality will be better. I don't know what happened in the last couple ones, but this one is going to be much better, I promise. Because if it's not, I'm going to throw myself off a bridge because it takes over 2 hours to properly edit it. You don't need to know that. Hey, Bob, how you doing?
I'm good, Matt. Since it's the new Macko and Cos and we're really trying now, I feel like we owe the people good audio.
Yes, yes.
That's part of trying.
It is part of trying, yeah. And it is a audio medium, so the audio is very important here.
Today is a very big day on the show.
Okay.
I came up with this idea this morning, mostly because I was thinking, okay, I'm going in to do the pod. And last time I was here, I wouldn't say I took over the pod, but it became about my point of view.
Yeah.
We were talking about whether or not the Leafs fan base was negative and...
And just the part that MLSC had to play, the overall nature and the environment of the Toronto sports scene, with specifically the relationship with the Maple Leafs and the local citizens.
And whether or not at the end of the day... if it was really worth it being a Leafs fan.
Right, yeah.
So my thought, and if I could just quickly summarize, because you know you walk away from something and you think, oh, I should have said this, or this was maybe too strong. Leafs fans are like Cowboys fans, but Vancouver Canucks fans are also quite negative and sort of joyless. I probably undersold how irrational the Montreal fan base can get when they're losing. So it's not like exclusive to the Leafs. I maybe didn't properly blame MLSC for making people this crazy. Probably overblamed the media a little bit. But my basic thesis is still the same, which is it's an extremely negative experience following the Leafs. And I highly recommend from everyone, walk away every once in a while. It's like when you get to be 50 years old, for example, and you're working out and they say give yourself more rest days because it takes longer to recover. You need Leafs recovery days.
I love it. Also, Amy does not believe in recovery day. She's like, oh, you going to go to the gym? No. Oh, how come? Well, you know, I should have a recovery day. Pause. Oh, so Amy doesn't believe in naps or recovery days.
You know, that's why she's such a doer and such an achiever.
That's true.
On the other hand, Matt, you not going to the gym ever is technically not a recovery day. It's an avoidance day.
That is true. There is a very different ways of looking at it. Hard to disagree. How about this? For people that are hardcore Leaf fans, try to diversify.
Yeah, like your portfolio.
Just diversify your portfolio. If I may recommend, the Raptors. They're playing Charlotte tonight, and I'm actually interested in that game. So maybe it's that. There's going to be a WNBA team, the Toronto Tempo. Maybe that's your thing.
My friend is an investor in the Northern Super League, which is the new women's soccer league, all-Canadian. And the final was this weekend. I got to go to the game at BMO. It was Toronto versus Vancouver. Heartbreaking. They were up 1-0, but then wound up giving a lead up. I don't know if you've heard about that happening in Toronto before.
Diversify, Bob.
Anytime on Saturday. It was a really great experience. And, you know, PWHL is... I feel like it should be a little cheaper than it is, but it's still a cheap ticket, relatively speaking.
Almost like MLSC doesn't care about the fans.
It's almost like that, if you could believe it. Yeah, diversify your portfolio is your sports portfolio is great advice. But I'm burying the lead here. So we talked a lot about my POV on Monday.
Yeah.
Or last Friday, I guess I should say. But it made me think, I need to know more about Matt.
Oh, thank God.
Why can't we just make this more about Matt? So I'm actually declaring this Matt Day.
Ooh,
on the pod.
Did someone read my diary?
So it's all the things that Matt cares about and all the points of view Matt wants to share.
Oh, I love it.
And I'm gonna William B. this, like SCTV. I'm just gonna laugh and applaud and clap. I'm gonna be your side man.
By the way, William B. Williams, that's a deep poll, Bob.
It is a deep
poll. And a very good poll for the 18% of the audience that's gonna know this.
Not even that high.
Not even that high. I wanna start here, Bob, by talking about Amy.
Okay.
So we're dog sitting right now. Louie is currently doing what he usually does, sitting quietly, just getting parts of his 19 and a half hours of rest that he needs every day. If you want to talk about a walking recovery day, it's that dog right there. Amy, I had to go away on Sunday for almost 6 hours. The dog had to be home home here on his own for 6 hours. Hour one of this, here's Amy's text that she sent me. And by this point, I'm nowhere close to here. I'm having visions of Louis upset by himself and jumping off the balcony. Should we not have left the door open? Ugh. Because I left the balcony door open so he could get some fresh air if he wanted it. And 1 hour in, Amy thinks this lazy dog is somehow going to jump over the balcony to his death because he's bored.
Matt, not only would my wife have sent me that exact same text, I would have sent that exact same text to my wife.
What are you talking about?
Cold hearted. I'm sorry it's Matt Day and we had to bring this crashing down after about 90 seconds.
This sucks.
But you can't leave though. You're on the 11th floor.
13th.
That's even worse. That's two floors higher.
This dog's not going to do anything. This dog does what it always does. It just sleeps. It just sleeps and sits. It sometimes changes. It sleeps on a couch. Then it sleeps in a bed. Then it goes on a rug. There's no way this dog is going to suddenly leap off the balconies to his demise. What's with the three of you guys? A bunch of hypochondriacs. How the hell did you raise a child with this level of fear?
You know how we raised her? Was by closing the door when we left the apartment so she wasn't in a place where she could walk outside on the balcony 13 floors up. That's how we raised her.
I don't think, if you left Cece now for six
hours.
Don't
give me this. Well, yes, but now she's 16, Matt. Yeah, the dog. She's not a dog either.
This dog is 42 in dog years, which way they came up with that? Like every 7 years. That feels like a myth.
Matt, don't try to bury your negligence under some sort of like common sense rationale.
There's nothing.
You're not being a helicopter parent by locking a door.
Why would this dog suddenly have to walk up on top of a chair, balance himself, and then jump off to his death? Why would he do that? Why would Louis, who is a very lazy dog, who all he wants to do is get fed and just sit next to another human, why would he fling himself off? It's not like this dog isn't smart enough for existential conversations with himself about the meaning of life and suicide and shuffling off one's mortal coil.
Okay, two things here. First of all, your idiotic point of view is making it impossible to have Matt Day.
I know. I'm so looking forward to Matt Day.
Secondly, you're a cost benefit analysis kind of guy. Mm-hmm. You look at most of your world as, is it worth the effort? And if it is, I should do it.
Yep.
How hard is it to lock a door? Like, how hard would you say on a scale of 1 to 100 to walk 4 feet and click a button?
It's very easy. I left the door open on purpose.
Hang on. Don't answer my question by answering a question I didn't ask you, Republican. All right. Okay. How hard is it to lock the door?
Easy.
Okay. How hard is it to explain to your brother Josh, whose dog this is, that you left the door open and it plunged to its death 13 floors below?
That would be a difficult conversation to have.
So in the cost-benefit analysis of this, you could avoid having an incredibly difficult situation by doing something amazingly easy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Except, so you're a logical guy.
I am.
What is the point of not doing the easy thing to avoid the potentially hard thing?
I was concerned about the quality of life of the dog, wanted to leave the door open in case he wanted to go outside on the balcony.
You wanted the dog to go on the balcony?
I wanted him to have options.
I don't even want you to talk on the phone to Cece. Never mind ever be in charge of her welfare.
There is, like most balconies in modern society, there is what we like to call a wall that is about, it's about 4 feet high. So this dog would not be able to do it. This is a small labradoodle that I have known its entire life. It is an incredibly lazy dog. There is not a chance in hell this dog would do it. This is you guys projecting your own fears and insecurities. This dog was fine. And when I got home, guess what the dog was doing? Sitting pretty much right where he is now going, okay, time for a belly to be rubbed.
I'm going to give you an opportunity here.
Nope.
If you choose to take it.
I will not.
Entirely up to you. I'm going to suggest we change the topic because you sound so stupid right now, and I worry about you. I'm going to be your friend here.
Yes.
I'm going to be the one who says, you know what? Don't have that other drink. Let's just get you a cab. Let's get you home because you're so stupid right now that you are on the cusp. What do you say?
I got to tell you, first, now I want another drink, and Matt Day
Matt Day.
It's the worst Matt Day ever. This is the worst. No, but I'm protecting you. I am locking the door.
I bet more people would side with
this
me.
This is how you protect something. Uh-huh. You take a small action in order to make sure something bad and big can't happen.
Now, I'm going to do the thing that immature people do all the time is when they deflect and put blame on the other person. Mm-hmm. You know, Bob, we could take a picture of Louis, put it on the Instagram account that you're in charge of, and let people decide whether or not this dog would have leapt to his death.
So we're going 2-for-2 on the GOP scorecard here. You answered a question I didn't ask and attacked me over something that we weren't talking about.
That's right.
Okay, yeah. Perfect. Yeah. Well done. You could go into office.
Ooh.
Okay, so we're going to get Matt Day back on track here. Great Cup yesterday.
It was a great game.
Okay, so it was a great game. Saskatchewan beats the Montreal Alouettes. It was the first CFL game I watched all year long.
Nice.
Didn't know any of the players, except for what's funny. With the CFL, I wrote it's like the Young and the Restless, because you cannot watch for 20 years, and then you flip it on, it's all the same people still involved.
Oh, yeah.
Jason Moss is the head coach. Anthony Calvillo is the offensive coordinator.
Corey Mace, the coach of Saskatchewan, played for over a decade on the defensive line. Oh, yeah. No one ever leaves.
Nobody ever leaves. No, it is the Hotel California personnel.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Like Zach Caleros was doing, he was working with the TSN broadcast of it. And I'm like, Zach's going to be in our lives for the rest of our lives.
That felt like an audition. Now, they need to tell him, don't break down the plays too much.
He really wanted to get into all the quarterback jargon.
I said to my wife, because we were watching the halftime show, trying to figure out who Machine Kelly was. Machine Gun Kelly.
I have thoughts on Machine Gun Kelly. We'll get to that in a second.
But I said, the way he answered this question is the way they all could answer this question, but they don't, because people won't be able to follow along. So that's why you get the, he needs to try harder, I don't love his body language. It assumes zero knowledge on the part of the viewing audience. This is what happens when someone goes in and actually answers a football question with football.
Yeah, when he's doing 4-3-5 and he's like really breaking it down. At one point, Duffy's like, explain to the audience what that specific thing meant.
And good, honestly, the explanation, the goggles, they do nothing. it was not helpful.
No, it was not. But the game.
Okay, well, yeah. Machine Gun Kelly.
Okay,
should we do this before the game? Or
Yeah. Machine Gun Kelly, I knew very little. I knew he was married to attractive actress.
Megan Fox,
that's it.
I didn't know this either. This was another thing we discussed during the halftime show.
I've seen it before, headlines. They were, I think, split up.
He drank her blood, I think.
I don't even know where to go with that. He apparently used to be a hardcore, much more of a hardcore rap, hence Machine Gun Kelly. But when they announced Machine Gun Kelly, he's coming on stage, and then he's singing Country Home, I feel he's got to change his name. Like, when you've got the word Machine Gun in your name, then you've either got to be rapping with a lot of bleeps, or you've got to be, you know, like death metal, you know. Like, you've got, but he was more like, hey, everyone, come on, let's grab a knee. Who's got an acoustic guitar?
Point. How about T-shirt Cannon Kelly?
T-shirt Cannon Kelly, Nerf Gun Kelly, but Machine Gun, his name has nothing to do with his music. And I was watching it going, my first thought was, oh, that's what you look like. Oh, that's what you sound like. I've seen your name in headlines on social media, but I've never consumed him. So I felt old and I felt confused.
He looked like a guy who works at a snowboard shop.
Oh, yeah. He'll tell you different types of wax. He will.
Mr. Zog Sex Wax.
Mr. Zog.
Did you ever have one of those t-shirts back in the day when somehow skateboarding became enormously popular in Canada?
Yep.
Yeah. Okay, so to the game. It was a great game. Here's my question. Was it a fair conclusion of the season? I don't know anything. I'm going to basically, Matt, I'm getting out of your kitchen. I'm letting you cook.
It was
a good conclusion?
It was a good conclusion. Saskatchewan was the better team. They were the best team in the CFL this year. Montreal, what was Davis Alexander, was a close second. I think the hamstring impacted him a little bit. The first interception, that ball hung up there a little bit too long. I think Marcus Sales had that pick, but you can correct me if I'm wrong, which a defensive back had the first interception.
I cannot, but Continue.
And then beyond that, it didn't really seem to impact him until near the end of the game. It was heroic, where he completed 2 third down passes, and you could see he's limping around. I'm just happy that the hamstring injury was part of the story of the Grey Cup, but was not one of the major stories of the during the conclusion.
Trevor Harris had an interesting vibe to him, which was somewhere between like Baker Mayfield and Kurt Warner. He felt like a Jesus guy the way he was talking, but he also seemed like he was really hardcore and
he had some defiance. He had some defiance.
Like Kurt Warner, as like the preeminent Christian quarterback of our lifetime, always felt like he was like the nice pastor. Mm-hmm. Like he's the one who's singing about Jesus as a lamb, and he's got the acoustic guitar.
Ironically, he's singing Machine Gun Kelly songs.
Country Roads, for example. Yeah. John Denver, too. But yes, that was a good callback, by the way. But then there was also like this kind of weird undertone of, we just got it done, and... You know, I couldn't tell whether or not he was going to like listen to hymnals or shotgun a beer.
Oh, definitely the first one. He is a man of faith.
Okay.
A man of faith for a very, very long time. He's a very nice guy. I've met him before and could not have been more polite, more sweet. Yeah. So I think the defiance is he gets to finally say, see, I can win the big one.
Right.
And there was so much talk in the playoffs about Nathan Rourke as the face of the league. And here comes Davis Alexander.
I don't even know who that is.
It's okay. You don't know who Nathan Rourke is? Oh, and he's Canadian.
I don't.
He was the MOP, and he's a Canadian.
He plays for Calgary?
He is the BC Lions starting quarterback.
Damn it.
You know what, though? No, I'm not going to even carry you close. There's nine teams, and you know he wasn't one of those
No, two. I didn't watch 1 minute, Matt.
Yeah. No, did you need to?
Not 1 minute.
You're raising children. You're a busy man.
I'm keeping dogs doors, safe.
Yeah, keeping doors closed so people don't fling themselves off a balcony.
That's all parenting is, Matt. Yeah. That's all parenting is.
I thought Trevor Harris was really smart. Leading up to the game, he talked about how, yeah, these guys you're mentioning, they will be the face of the league, but not today. And that was sort of Trevor Harris's vibe.
So the commissioner is Stuart Johnson, who both of us worked for at TSM.
Yep.
Stuart and I used to be the last two guys at the office when we were both young and up and coming. He was like the production. I was the production guy. He was the programming guy. Mm-hmm. Here's a lesson for you kids. Get into programming.
Yeah.
Be the one who makes the deals, not the one who makes the shows.
It might not sound as cool in your 20s, but by your late 40s, it ain't bad.
100%. But he's a very smart guy. Yeah. He's a very good guy. And I suspect he's probably a good commissioner. I hope he's a good commissioner. I'd be surprised if he isn't, though. He's really, really intelligent and very hardworking and very connected. So my question for you is the CFL in good shape? It felt like a good final game, like, but there's always like, I spent most of my life fielding questions in the sports world about how long till the CFL collapses. Are we past that now?
I hope so. There's always going to be, what's wrong with the CFL in Toronto? Is it going to work? No, it's going to work well enough.
Right.
And that's it. But how many different football leagues have started and died? Ones with The Rock or Vince McMahon or Andrew Luck's father is the commissioner. Like, there are so many spring football leagues. They all die. They all go under. The CFL keeps going. And the CFL is always going to, you know, until our entire models of ad revenue and live sports and the impact that live sports has and all that, until that fundamentally fully changes, CFL is always going to make money. It's always going to be around. And there are some... When the CFL is bad, it's because there's only nine teams. So let's say two of the good quarterbacks get hurt, one of the young quarterbacks doesn't develop, and suddenly they're like, shit, we got one good quarterback in the league. Well, the NFL has years where they've got 14, 15, 18 shitty teams with shitty quarterbacks, but you don't notice it because there's Tom Brady or there's younger Aaron Rodgers. But the CFL isn't a good spot. Nathan Rourke? He's a Canadian who's dominating that position. They have Davis Alexander. They've got young guys. So I think the CFL is actually in a pretty good place right now. I write for CFL.ca, but I can tell you the shitty years that when we've had it in this league. But no, 2025 was a good year.
So we've got the future head coaches now in the league.
That's right.
Okay. Yeah. I feel like we're getting Matt Day back on track a little bit.
There we go.
Are they ever going to get to 10 teams, Matt?
God, I hope so. That to me is the biggest failure of this league. And it's not been able to find a way to get it done.
And it just needs to be in the East, right?
It just needs
to. But does it feel like population-wise, those are the places that make sense? Quebec City, the Maritimes, Kitchener-Waterloo.
Maritimes is where it has to be. It's got to be in the Maritimes. And I know it must be difficult because it's about finding the right corporate sponsors. I am not smart enough to figure it out. But that, to me, is my biggest disappointment with the CFL. You get, first off, you need 10 You can't have a league with an odd number of teams. It's weird. And then you're fully coast to coast, you know, from Atlantic to the Pacific and anywhere in between.
I like the idea of a Kitchener-Waterloo team. You know, there's about 650,000 people who live in that area. And we talk about the Golden Horseshoe. That's where most of the population is in Canada. And that area is growing economically. I'm looking at maybe buying a rental property there because those schools are only going to explode. Like the University of Waterloo is the MIT of the North. Mm-hmm. The kids that come out of Waterloo are incredible when it comes to engineering and computer science and so forth. There's going to be like just if we develop things properly in this country, something is going to come out of that area, just like Research in Motion did back in the day. There's just too many smart kids in that neighborhood that, you know, and there's enough of a population. You've got Hamilton down the highway and then Toronto a little further down the highway. As much as I would love a team out in the Maritimes, it feels like it would be buried. But it feels like Canada is just going to have to build out the Golden Horseshoe and make it more of an economic generator. It deserves another team. Deserves another NHL team.
Oh, it definitely deserves another NHL team. I'm not going to push back on you about Kitchener-Waterloo. I do wonder about Southern Ontario or just Ontario as a whole. Hamilton does very well. Mm-hmm. Toronto doesn't. And maybe in Ottawa can be up and down. Maybe. So I might be a little cynical about it. Also, think about this, Bob, from a production standpoint.
Okay.
Every time there's a game for the Halifax Schooners, you're going to have all those great sweeping shots of Halifax and all the different colored homes, and there'll be an iceberg and just all and the tracking shots. Oh, it'll be gorgeous before the game.
Matt, you've ignored the lesson of 5 minutes ago. Kids, don't get into production. Get into programming. Make the deal. Don't make the show.
Yeah, that's true.
That only the chumps make the show.
Yeah, but I like making the show.
I know, me too. And that's why we cast our own lots. And
Well, what are you talking about, Bob? I mean, I just heard a couple minutes ago you're thinking of buying more property. You've got a cottage. You have a home in downtown Toronto, and now you're going to be buying in the Golden Horseshoe. I didn't know. When did you become?
But I'm
land
going
baron?
To do it with funding from nefarious sources. So I don't want to make it seem like it's my money. I'm trying to see how do I run a fraud of some sort in order to bring in cash. I've been thinking a lot about crypto.
Oh.
Bitcoin.
Ah. And blockchain.
Blockchain.
I don't know.
NVIDIA.
I love when I get someone to explain blockchain to me. And then 3 minutes later, I'm like, can we just do anything else?
My nephew, who's so into this, because he's like 24 years old and he's a guy and he lives in this world. So he's into Bitcoin and how it's going to make the next billionaire. So I'm like, what's that actually do? And he's like, well, let's say you needed to wire money across the world. It would do it instantaneously. I'm like, do you know how often I don't wire money across the world?
I can honestly, Bob, to back you up, at least 9 hours of my day is spent not wiring money.
Maybe that's what the dog does, and that's why it's so tired. It's just wiring money around the world all day long, and that's why it needs 19 and a half hours of sleep.
Hold on. Going back to the beginning.
Okay.
So we have tons of time left on this podcast. Let me get my glasses on.
Okay.
We've got about 32 minutes.
Okay.
If this dog hasn't moved 1 inch in 32 minutes, I want you to apologize to me for saying I'm a bad dog owner for leaving the door open so it could get some fresh air. If it doesn't move in the next 32 minutes, Amy, you sit your ass. Don't you move. She moves, he's going to move.
Okay. And if the dog does move in the next 32 minutes, you pay my daughter's tuition at private school next year.
Ooh, which private school is it?
It's not one of the big ones. Smart. It's not one of the good ones.
Okay, not Branksome or anything.
But she's
like
not
that.
Trying scholarship hard.
Okay.
She's like you a little bit. She looked at me the other day and she said, the grades don't really count until grade 11, right?
Oh.
And I said, that's true. And she said, okay. And I thought, this is Matt in grade 9 French. She's figured out what she needs to do and what she doesn't need to do.
Au revoir, Francais. That means goodbye, Francais.
Okay, so Matt Day continues here. I feel like we've gotten it back on track. I was a little mean to you earlier, but you fired up my parenting juices.
I did.
Okay, top five. We're talking Canada.
Yep.
And I sent you this list earlier. Mm-hmm. I said, you know, we often do top fives on movies and stuff like that, but we haven't done one on wine in a really long time. So in honor of the Grey Cup, Matt's top five Canadian winemakers.
This is so hard. I like, if anyone checks out the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff podcast, if you need two podcasts in your life, I've interviewed, I'd say at least 100 winemakers throughout Canada. Okay. The question is, which one am I going to go at number six?
Well, it is a top five.
I know it's a top five. Okay. I'm going to go number six. I'm going to go Keith Tyers from Kloss and Chase at number six. And Keith, I emailed him yesterday. The wine I had with the Grey Cup was a 2018 South Clos Pinot Noir. It was awesome. And I sent him an email. I'm like, this thing is drinking beautifully. But I'll put you at number six. The top five, I'm going to do in no particular order because I am a coward.
Not, just so you know, that's not how top fives work. It's not.
Okay,
fine. You have to stack rank
Fine.
By the way, look, the dog just moved. The dog just moved. Yes, he did. He flipped over like a hot dog in 7-Eleven on one of those curly things.
He flipped over, but he has not moved.
No, but you said the dog doesn't move. He did move. He had a change of position. He went 180 degrees to the other side.
If he moves an inch forward or back.
You don't get to renegotiate the terms.
He barely moved.
I'm going to let Sandra know that we can take that vacation.
Yeah. Okay, number five, I'm going to go, because she is the newest, I will go Kelly Mason, head winemaker at Domaine Kaylus, and she has her own line of wines as well.
Okay.
So I'll do Kelly Mason at number five. At number four, from Martin's Lane in Okanagan, Shane Munn. By the way, most of these are going to be a lot of Pinot Noir and Chardonnay, but actually his Riesling's fucking good. And I'm going to do it quick because if I wax poetic, everyone is going to leave. So that is number four. Number three, I'll do J.L. Grew from Stratus Vineyard. He probably should be higher. He's been doing it forever. The man's a master, but I don't drink as much Stratus Vineyard. Stratus is a little bit more big-bodied, full-bodied wines, Bordeaux blends, Syrahs, things like that. At number two, the combo. My God, when a new winery is getting started, and if the winery owner's got money, you throw out the bat signal for Ann Sperling and Peter Gamble. These guys are the best consultants. They also make their own wine in Ontario. They made wine in Okanagan and a pretty good Malbec in Mendoza. But number one, it's got to be Thomas Batchelder. Thomas Batchelder, Niagara, the man's made wine in Oregon and Burgundy and here in Ontario for Domaine Clos Jourdain and, of course, his own wines. Thomas Batchelder, Gamay, Chardonnays, and Pinot Noir. Batchelder's number one.
Man, Matt Day is hard. Okay, that was great. Is anyone going to know who any of those people are, or is that just for a really super duper intenso wine crowd?
Well, remember, there is no big giant wineries in Canada.
Like, none? What about Inniskillen?
Inniskillen would probably be the biggest, like Inniskillen or Jackson Triggs. But for the most part, it is mostly very small little wineries. So I would just say to everyone out there, just go back, rewind a minute, try to remember some of those names. These are all incredible winemakers.
Okay, so for next, like for Friday, for our next pop, I was listening to someone suggesting that the stock market is very unstable right now and that maybe collectibles could be a good place to put money.
Mm.
And they were describing just the different kinds of things you can collect. You know, gold is number one, but even like comic books, Pokemon cards. And they said art and wine. Wine is a good investment. So here's something I want you to research for next time. Answer this question with your top five. If I was going to invest $1,000 into a bottle of wine with the hopes that its value would appreciate over the next 10 years, which wines would I get? Top five stack ranked.
I won't give it now, but wine is a very safe one. Wine always goes up in price. My thing, like I have wines that if I sold now, I could sell them for five times what I bought.
Right.
But I ain't selling all those bottles. Every one of those bottles is an investment into my my emotional future.
Okay. And that's, you know, again, you and I are in programming are in production. We're not in programming.
Yeah.
The people in programming run the world. Mm-hmm. They're the commissioners of the CFL. The ones who make the shows are hanging out with you and your dog on a Monday afternoon. Yeah.
Hasn't moved, by the way.
Hasn't moved. Well, no, now, but it moved before.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Leafs. Yeah. I'm going to start with my top six, or with my Leafs in six words. Mm-hmm. And then I think we can, you know, I didn't watch the game.
I unfortunately did.
Yeah. I didn't watch the game because my daughter wanted to watch BoJack Horseman, and I thought I've been
waiting. Better choice.
Yeah, I've been waiting 15 years to do this, so we binge-watched BoJack Horseman on Saturday night. You know, I followed the game, you know, online and stuff, so I could see what was up. But okay, here's my Leafs in six words, and then I'm going to let you cook again. "It's all right, Ma, I'm only bleeding," a lyric from Bob Dylan. It feels like people are trying to find reasons to not panic and yet also acknowledge that it's panic time.
There's only one positive. Well, no. John Tavares has played great.
Mm-hmm.
Nick Robertson is having just a really nice start. But when the second name I mention is Nick Robertson, trouble. The best thing the Leafs have going, and everyone does this. Everyone says the same thing. Like, well, yeah, the team's not playing great. Pause. But no one is. If the best thing you can say about the Maple Leafs is that Montreal and Ottawa are regressing a bit, Tampa hasn't been great, Florida has all the injuries, that's not a good sign for the Maple Leafs when the best thing going, the biggest advantage the Maple Leafs have is everyone else around, no one else is great. That's not exactly a vote of confidence.
The thing that worries me the most about the Leafs is that the things that you worry might go wrong have gone wrong. It doesn't feel like some black swan event. It's not force majeure where suddenly some crazy natural disaster happens that takes out everything. It's like, okay, maybe Austin Matthews, who's still really good, is just going to get banged up a lot because that's who he is. And he's out. Have you heard when he's coming back?
Craig Berube made it sound like it's not a big deal.
Sure he did. What would you do if you were Craig Berube?
I would be saying that exact same thing.
But we don't know.
We don't know. And the concern is like, well, last year you were healthy but never healthy. And so, yeah, there absolutely is a concern that this is now part of who he is.
And to the same point, you and I, when we did our season preview for the Leafs, were like, if Chris Tanev goes down for a long period of time, these guys are fucked. Yep. And that's exactly what's happened. And he's a 35-year-old who's played a very rugged physical game for a lot of years. And it's not shocking that he's out. How could it be shocking that a 35-year-old with a ton of wear and tear on him is going to miss substantial amounts of time? But I don't know that we all necessarily thought, I think we thought the defense would be better 2 through 6. But they haven't been. They really haven't. But we knew Morgan Riley wasn't a great defensive defenseman. We didn't know he was this bad. But all of these things were things you could see might happen.
Yeah.
Fuck, it's a tough year, though, when they all happen.
When they're all happening.
When they all happen.
And Brandon Carlo's now on IR for a little bit of time. And, you know, so Carlo hasn't been great. McCabe hasn't been great. Morgan Riley hasn't been great. Actually, I've kind of enjoyed Oliver Ekman-Larsson, I think.
Yeah, OEL's been okay.
I think he's done a really nice job.
It's the Troy Stetcher years, Matt. We just picked him up off of waivers from Edmonton.
The worst thing is Troy Stetcher is going to have to be part of the solution. Philippe Myers is really bad.
He's bad.
It just, maybe he's just having a bad season.
No, he might not be a pro.
Yeah,
he's certainly not going to be a pro much longer with the Leafs.
No, there's a bunch of Marlies that were called up for practice today. I don't know who's going to be playing tomorrow in the lineup. But yeah, that's the main issue, is that collectively the entire defense is either hurt or they're not playing. They're playing below whatever standard expectation we had. And it's been a disaster. It really has been. Like, just the Leafs don't. The main problem of the Leafs is on most nights they're the second hardest working team on the ice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you were going to do it in one sentence, it would be that. And it's been night in, night out. Like, I look back at my notes and I'm basically writing the same thing over and over. And I got to tell you, Bob, the Maple Leafs are making my life hard. You know, it's Matt Day on the show, so I can turn everything and make it about me. But it's November 17th. And I'm having a hard time talking about the team, you know, because you kind of just run out of saying the same thing over and over again. And I can go through the goals. Oh, a lot of standing around. Oh, Teravainen undressed Morgan Riley. Or, oh, William Nylander not fighting hard on the boards on the game-winning goal. Like, and then it's like, which game was that? And I'm like, pick a game, because it could be almost any of the games.
Oh, yeah. It's a bit of a watched pot never boils thing with this team right now. We're all watching it to change. Like, we want to see signs of change right away. But it's more like Louis on the ground here, where movement was indicated by an 180-degree flip to the other side. But he's basically still in the same spot.
Yes, and you're right. Technically, he did move. How much movement has this dog made since you sat down?
Oh, in the last 8 or 9 minutes, none. Yeah. I'm checking to see he's breathing every few minutes.
We put the little glass under his nose just to make sure.
it's so much of a drag because winter is long and cold and dark, and having the Leafs be good is something that's nice about winter. And it doesn't feel like we're going to get that this year. They've had a pretty good run. They didn't have success in the playoffs. I feel like that run is probably over, or at least it's over unless the team has to change quite a bit at this point to keep the window open, I think. It's not tweaks anymore.
And they can't do anything. They don't have a first-round pick this year. They don't have a first-round pick next year. They don't have all these like young prospects just oozing with talent that you can trade. You're only going to get better through internal development. Easton Cowan suddenly becomes a legit forward who can give you 14 minutes. Auston Matthews has to go back to being elite, where he's not McDavid, but he's just one notch below. You're gonna need Joseph Wall and Stolarz to be as good as they were last year.
It's not gonna happen. And even when you talk about Ben Danforth as a prospect who's just picked up, and they're like, well, he projects out as a guy who's good defensively, and he might be a number five. So you're waiting for the guy who might be a defensive number five defenseman to mature enough. The help's not coming.
It's not coming. And by the way, here's how bad the prospect pool is. You know what name everyone says? Ben Danforth. And then if you really want to challenge them, go name a second one. Mm-hmm. And they're like, Ben Danforth.
Well, now that Cowan is probably going to be a Leaf. Yeah, that's it.
And should be. Actually, Easton Cowan looked fairly good against the Blackhawks.
Do you know how you know that this year is different than the other years? Because there was a general sentiment, whether it was in the press or with fans, that if the team got to the end of the year and the trade deadline, you definitely should put assets out there to see if you can improve it. And that turned into a lot of, Scott Laughton and Ryan O'Reilly back in the day. So some of them were good. But regardless, the point is, would anybody now in their right mind say when we get to the end of the year that they should start thinking about what assets do they have to get rid of?
Nope.
For the purposes of a run?
Nope.
Nobody, right?
No.
No.
No, it's not going to happen.
And most people are saying keep your powder dry. And that's just because we are at the end of a cycle. We're not, like most cycles, they don't end all at once. There isn't that precipitous drop off. You know, we'll have a couple years of being sort of okay. I think this team will turn it around eventually. They'll fight to get a playoff spot. Maybe they get it, maybe not. But they're not going to be horse shit. They're not going to be San Jose over the last few years or Anaheim over the last few years. We're not going to be there with this team. This team is too good for that. You know, they're going to be like kind of like the Raptors were the last few years, where you're kind of hoping they get into the play-in and you don't expect much out of them. They're not a contending team anymore. They're not even a good team anymore.
They're not. Yeah. Oh, no, I can't argue with any of that. And I've been trying to think of it more big picture. And the theme of all things come to an end. Mm-hmm. All, like, you know, it's that the Leafs are not more special than any other team. The Bruins missed the playoffs. The Rangers have missed the playoffs for the last year. Like, this happens. And I was trying to make a comparison with them and the Sharks, but it's actually quite unfair to the San Jose Sharks, who had more
this year or in past.
No,
years?
No, like just like San Jose, they had that long run, but their long run, they did even more elite winning. They went to at least a cup final. They made some conference finals. So the Leafs are kind of a poor man's San Jose Sharks. That's what they feel like on November 17th.
They probably have the misfortune of running into the Florida Panthers. And that maybe is not satisfying, but it's just simply true. They were a really good team who consistently in the second round ran into a team that's a great team. The Indiana Pacers. If you're an Indiana sports fan, you probably think this Pacers team with Rick Smits and Reggie and whoever else.
The Davis brothers.
Like, on any given year, they probably should have been champions or could have been, but they were never going to beat the Bulls.
Nope.
Just didn't happen.
Listen, the Utah, I mean, we can go on and on. Yeah. It's the misfortune of being, you're a good, sometimes very good team. Unfortunately, they're a juggernaut over there.
And not every year has a great team.
Like this year, and that could help the Maple Leafs.
Matt Day nailed it again. Yeah. Okay, let's talk about the NFL. And again, in the spirit of Matt Day, I'm just going to let you start it off with a question. I'm going to ask you a question. You cook, okay? You ready? What was the game of the weekend in the NFL?
Game of the weekend, it was either Seattle losing 21-19 to the Rams, or I think it has to be Kansas City losing to Denver.
Was that the best game or the most impactful game? Or both?
Yeah, I'm talking impactful here.
Okay.
And The funny thing is Kansas City is 5-5, but FanDuel has them have with better odds of them winning the Super Bowl than Denver, who's 8-2, than New England, who's 8-2, than Detroit. Like, there's about 7-8 teams that have a bigger long shot to win, and it's because people will never quit on Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid.
Should they?
Well, here's the funny thing is right now they're like 9th or 10th in the AFC. And some of the teams ahead of them beat them. Like Jacksonville, if KC and Jacksonville have the same record, Jacksonville makes the playoffs, and they just blew out the Chargers. Weird game there. And Kansas City misses it. Like right now, the odds say that Kansas City will miss the playoffs. And them losing that game. And last year, they were 10-0 in one-score games. This year, 0-5. Regression comes for everyone. See, Maple Leafs, you're not so special. Even Kansas City is scuffling. I would say that was the most impactful game.
And that's probably the most impactful stat. I've seen that around a few places today, and it really speaks to Kansas City in years past you thought would never lose those close games. And mm-hmm. Patrick Mahomes was the number one reason why.
Yeah.
But also, they had great weapons on offense. And they still kind of do, but it's the same ones and they're getting older. But is it fair to be this suspicious of Patrick Mahomes? Because he's only 30. It's not like he's 38 years old and he's really out of gas. One of the things that was so exciting about him was not just that he was this good, there was a chance he might be this good for the next decade or a big part of that decade, you know, eventually challenging Tom Brady for the GOAT at that position. It seems like a weird time to say, should I be buying Patrick Mahomes stock? But
I think you still should. You know, when I looked at that game, that was, I mean, listen, there was plays he missed. There absolutely were plays that he missed. But I put this more on the offensive line. They thought they had fixed it and they haven't.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the number one issue with them. And just part of it is just this is it's an unsatisfactory answer. Just bad luck. You know, 0-5 in one score games. Here's the funny thing about Kansas City. They're 5-5. I believe, I don't have the stats in front of me, they're, I think, second in the AFC in scoring. Like, they're 5-5, but their 5 wins, they blow you out. 5 losses, they're all losing by 3, which is usually an indicator of a better team than what their record would say.
There's an old saying that slumps are coming when you win games that you should lose, and slumps get broken because you're losing games that you probably should have won.
Yeah.
And eventually the math starts mathing, and the odds of this stuff, it just starts to fall in your favor. So over the next 4 weeks, they've got the Colts, which is a tough game, then the Cowboys, Texans, and then Chargers. Chargers, I don't know if that's a tough game or not. It's hard to say. But it feels like they have to win 3 of 4 of those games, which would make them 8-6 and at least makes them competitive.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see that happening? If you were doing the FanDuel 4-pack, can they go 3 out of 4 in these next 4 games?
Oh,
I'll repeat it. Colts, Cowboys, Texans, Chargers.
Yeah, they absolutely can. Because Daniel Jones could do another 4 turnover game.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he could be elite. He could be great. I feel bad for Daniel Jones and Sam Darnold. We're just waiting. And then, yes, all those other... It's so unfair.
Like, it's got to be called Pumpkin Watch.
Oh, it really... It's
just waiting for them to turn into pumpkins.
Yeah. Ah, Darnold. Oh, that was a tough one. But no, they can absolutely do that. They still have a very good defense. And they still have Andy Reid and Mahomes. And like, you know, they still have a lot of that infrastructure there. So, yes, 3-1 against those opponents. Dallas's defense stinks. The Chargers lost their 2 best players in their left tackle and their right tackle, and Jacksonville just gashed them for like 200 yards on the ground. And they held them to like 130 yards of offense. The Jacksonville Jaguars are not the 85 Chicago Bears. They're not the 2000 Ravens. I have to use more updated references with football. They're not the Legion of Boom Seattle team from the early 2000s.
That's the updated one?
That's the best one
from
I got.
From 20 years ago?
No, that's 10 years ago.
No, it's more.
14 years ago. About 14 years ago.
My mom texted me yesterday to ask if the Chiefs are losing because of Taylor Swift. I think she meant it.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of fans, if you gave them truth serum, probably wanted the same thing.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, people are busy. But yeah, I would say I would say that was the biggest game. The one thing I'll say nice about Seattle, they had 4 turnovers. They were 1-for-4 in the red zone, and they nearly won in L.A. They had 14 more first downs. They had over 150 more yards, and they held the ball for almost 38 minutes.
Okay, so let me set this up because I knew it was going to be Matt Day. I said, what are the three games you want to talk about the most? And you said KC was one of them.
Yeah.
And then you also said LA and Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
And so do you want to switch it? So the Rams beat Seattle 21-19 yesterday. Highly, highly consequential game in the NFC. You've already sort of started talking about it. Is your takeaway not that you felt strongly about the LA win, but like kind of sad for Seattle that they lost a game they should have won?
Yeah, they should have won that game. And the problem is Sam Darnold in the highest stakes games, he loses. He throws the picks. And most of them were on third down. And there was pressure. And he was rushing those throws. And they were bad decisions. This wasn't like, because some picks are, goes off a guy's hand. Or like one of Davis Alexander's interceptions of the Grey Cup. It was at the end of the first half. He threw up a Hail Mary. It got picked off. These things happen. But that version of Sam Darnold, the big mistake at the wrong moment, it's why he's not in Minnesota anymore. And if you go back and look at their losses this year against San Francisco 49ers, Tampa Bay Buccaneers, or now the Rams, there was always a critical turnover near the end of those games,
and
it came back again.
Didn't he lose to the Rams last year in the playoffs with Minnesota?
Yep, got sacked like nine times.
So is this a LA has figured him out kind of thing? Is there something about the way they defend him? I know that he has this propensity regardless, but yeah. Is this just a bad matchup for them because LA plays him tough?
Yeah, that's part of it. LA's got a really good defense. So yeah, absolutely it is. It's just we want to see the one time in the and he's won some big games. And Sam Darnold's had a great year. But the highest stakes games, he's really bad. He's not even that he's average, is that he's really bad.
So he's leafy.
Yes.
He's got a bit of a leafy thing, whereas the stakes go up,
yep.
He shrinks a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
That said, though, you know, the defense played so well. Matt Stafford only had 130 yards. He didn't, you know, they were able to do a lot. And the end of the game, there was a punt from LA that went really deep into Seattle's zone. And then eventually Seattle has to try to get out and kick a field goal so that they can tie this game. The field goal winds up being 61 yards and the kicker misses it. And do you think like football is so crazy that you play basically this physical war of a sport and it comes down to a deep punt?
Yeah.
And you just miss it by a few yards?
It's so cruel.
It is so cruel. But it really speaks to your point about like losing games that you should win, that if they played that same exact game 100 times, don't you feel Seattle would have won it more times than not?
Yeah, absolutely. Again, the red zone 1-for-4, all those turnovers. If you just need to you could still have a couple turnovers.
Even if he throws three picks.
Then it could be absolutely could have been a different game. So there is, it's like there's something positive for Seattle in that complimentary football. They do everything else great. I saw this stat, I think it was Ben Solak. That game was Matt Stafford's worst game in terms of average yards per pass since he's been a Los Angeles Ram, was the game he played that Sunday against that defense. So there is positives to take away.
The other game, the third game that you wanted to talk about, you actually just said Josh Allen, which I thought was an interesting way to set it up. You talked about the other two games, and then I also want to talk about Josh Allen,
yeah.
Which is appropriate. They win yesterday over Tampa Bay 44-32, but it was almost like Tampa Bay lost to Josh Allen.
Yes.
That's who they actually played.
Let it be said, Louis has now moved.
Louis moved.
He's now moved, and he's now going to go and jump up on the couch, and then he's going to go back to not moving again. You're
lazy. I'm going to text you a number.
Uh-huh.
It's the admissions coordinator at Hudson College.
Ooh, Hudson.
And we're going to get some numbers to them so that the checks can come out of your account.
Bob, there's a better chance Hudson Bay starts selling jackets and sweaters again than this.
You know, you still
happen.
Owe me a steak.
I do. I still owe you a steak dinner.
This goes all the way back to when you and I were on the air at TSN, and I said,
Clayton Kershaw.
No, it wasn't that.
Oh, I thought it was Kershaw.
It was who's going to win a major first, Roger Federer or Tiger Woods? And I took Federer, and you took Woods, and Federer won one more.
That feels dumb of me. I feel like a dumb bet that I did. Josh Allen, he did the thing I love the most.
What's that?
He did the opposite of Kevin Durant with Golden State.
Okay.
Because I've got to get a Kevin Durant shot when I can. Josh Allen threw one of the dumbest interceptions you will see in that first quarter.
Mm-hmm.
And also Josh Allen had the best single game of this is what an MVP looks like.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Buffalo defense gave up 367 yards. They gave up 32 points, almost 200 yards on the ground. The Buffalo Bills were running attack without Josh Allen, 57 yards. They benched Keon Coleman, and the leading receiver was a guy named Tyrell Shavers, which sounds like the name when the NFL, when Hollywood does a football movie and they and they don't get permission from the NFL to license teams. Like, I've never heard of this guy. He led them.
I watch every Bills game every week. I have no idea who this guy is.
I didn't know who he was until late last night. And for Josh Allen to have 6 touchdowns and produce 44 points and beat a Tampa Bay team that has a winning record, even with that loss, to me, that is what an MVP looks like. Your defense is shit. You can't run the ball. Your receivers, no one's heard of. And you still go and win and have 6 touchdowns.
I think the most magnanimous gesture I've seen on a football field in a long time is Josh Allen single-handedly beating the other team. And on those rushing touchdowns, when he would punch it through, would give the ball to the offensive lineman so the lineman could spike it.
Yeah.
If that's not graciousness, what is?
I'm going to feel so bad when Josh Allen gets knocked out of the playoffs.
It's going to be so heartbreaking. Who does it? It's going to be Mahomes.
Probably is again.
You know it. I know it. Do you know how, like, Leafs fans, they just know that Florida's going to figure it out? Uh-huh. Or in years past, they just know Boston is going to figure it out. I know in my heart that somehow the Chiefs are going to beat the Bills in the playoffs. I just know it.
Here's the funny thing, Bob. And this is the lunacy of being a sports fan. And I said this on air so people could hear it. I believe the Kansas City Chiefs are going to miss the playoffs.
Okay.
And then I was asked, well, what if Kansas City was facing Buffalo in the playoffs? Who wins? Mm-hmm. Like, it's Kansas City. Like, that's a funny thing. I don't think they're making the playoffs, but if they did make
the
playoffs.
But you would still take them to beat the Bills.
I would take them to beat anyone in the AFC. 100%.
This is the ultimate feast or famine.
Yeah.
They're either going to not make the playoffs or they're going to the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We have like 4 minutes to talk about the Raptors.
Okay, well, let's do this because they're 8-5. They play Charlotte tonight, which you mentioned. And there's a pretty good chance, because Charlotte's bad, that they're going to be 9-5, which, you know, as you get to that 15-game mark.
And they got Brooklyn and Washington coming up, and those teams want nothing to do with W's.
Yeah, this is, you know, here's what I came to realize about the Raptors, that I don't understand them. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. But I keep trying to figure out takes, and none of them stick for more than 3 games. So here's the things that I know about the Raptors. I know that Darko's a good coach. I don't know if he's a great coach. I don't know if he's Eric Spoelstra. But they hired someone who wound up doing a good job. He is developing this team. They run an efficient offense. It's, you know, they're 3rd in the league in assists per game. It's a nice brand of basketball to watch, never mind the fact that they're 8-5. I know that Darko's good. And I know that Scotty's not a star, but I'm glad we have him. After that, I don't know, Matt. How about you?
I knew they were going to be good.
Really?
I thought, and I think they will finish in the top 6. I think they'll finish like 5th or 6th.
Really?
I do. I do because they have talent. Last year, they didn't use the talent on purpose. They'd be a close game in the 4th quarter, and here comes the 905. Here comes the G League players. Scotty, R.J. Barrett, take a seat.
Did you ever see the Rodney Dangerfield Easy Money?
Yeah.
And he goes to the track to bet on the trotters. And it's obviously a fixed race. And the jockey, one of the horses, is like putting his feet on the ground to try to try and drag and slow the horse down.
I totally forgot that. I've seen that movie.
That's how I feel the Raptors were last year. They were trying to not be good.
This year, they're trying every night.
Yeah.
Grady Dick isn't playing as many minutes. If they were trying to develop, Grady Dick and Colin Murray Boyles would be playing more minutes. They're not. Why? Because they're trying to win. Because they know they're not trying to tank. You don't go and sign Brandon Ingram. You don't be in the tax if you're not trying to win. They're trying to win every night. And also they know this. With Brooklyn and Washington and Indiana and Utah and the Pelicans, They're not finishing in the bottom 5. They can't tank like those teams.
It's interesting because the bottom of the East is awful, and they're clearly not that bad. But right now, these teams sit between 8-6 and 6-6. Miami, Milwaukee, the Sixers, the Celtics, and the Bulls. So the Raptors are just a little bit better than them, but that's 5 teams that are more or less as good as the Raptors record-wise right now.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Like, I really don't. I feel like Milwaukee will wind up being better than...
Than the Raptors? Yeah, just because of Giannis.
The Celtics you have, or the Sixers you have no idea.
No idea.
And Edgecombe, it's not because of Joel Mobeed. It's this Edgecombe kid is great.
Yeah, Edgecombe started off really well, but you never know. Maybe he cools off a little bit. And if they got to rely on Embiid or Paul George, well, good luck.
You know, Miami has Heat culture.
They've been great offensively.
They have been great offensively. They feel like not Miami, but yeah. And then the Bulls, I mean, just law of averages suggests they had to not suck 1 year. And Josh Giddey's been really good. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I don't know how to gauge this team. I know that they're fun, but I did want to offer you up something on Matt Day.
Yeah.
A nickname that I think you'll like. So one of the better Raptors bench players this year is Sandro.
Don't even.
Right.
Yeah. Like, Mama Dukalis, like Marma.
It's a hard name to pronounce.
I tried to say it on the show today because I wanted to praise the Raptors bench. Uh-huh. And I was honest. I'm like, guys, I want to talk about the bench, but I can't pronounce this guy's last name.
Right. So it's a Georgian, I believe. Look, I believe he's Georgian.
It's some Eastern European nation designed to make me embarrassed.
Don't condescend. These nations have, you know, maybe Matt Day, but you can't like.
No, I complain about them all equally because they have a lot more letters in their name and I'm not smart enough.
So it's like Mama Jashvili. Like, so here's what I think we call him. Sandro the Mamushka. He's the Mamushka. If you've ever watched the Addams Family movie, that's the dance that Gomez does, the Mamushka. It's a good nickname for a guy who's probably going to be a bench contributor this year.
It's a great nickname because I can Marmushka.
He's the Mamushka. Not only do you not know, but now you sound smart because you've made a pop culture reference. You've turned a loss into a win. Is there anything more, Matt, than that?
It really isn't, Bob. And as we ended, I got to say, I've enjoyed Matt Day. Thank you.
It
started out rocky, but you know what we're doing, Bob, as we end this? You know what we're doing for Matt Day after this is done? We're taking that lazy dog back to its home, and Amy and I are going to have a hot tub and have a little bit of burgundy.
Is that actually true?
That is 100% true.
That is what being an uncle instead of being a parent is like. You fucking bastard. I can never do Matt Day again. You know what I'm going to do today? I'm going to go home and fucking comb through the wreckage that is my life to try and find one shred of something enjoyable.
Well, just make sure the door is closed so no one hops off the roof.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.